Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Friday, the 29th of July, 2011, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. This is episode 55 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to finish what we started during our last episode, looking at psychic predictions and how they turned out. But this time, we're going to look at how I went with my psychic predictions for 2010. Plus, I'm going to make a few new ones for the next year and a half to come. Then in our movie review, we'll have a look at two new movies, The Princess of Montpensier and Armadillo. All that and more coming up today on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Now, before we get into our LGBT news roundup, I should mention that some of you will be listening to this show as a podcast, and some of you will be listening to the broadcast on Joy 94.9. That's because, well, as I don't have time right now to commit to producing a new show every week, I'm not on the regular permanent Joy 94.9 grid. But I will be recording Reality Check as a podcast every few weeks, and then that show will be broadcast on Joy 94.9 during some of the overnight transmissions. So whether you're a podcast listener or a late night radio listener, thanks for tuning in. Okay, now on to business. Our LGBT news roundup for the last 3 weeks or so. And let's go straight to our breaking news story, which is the exciting news coming out of Colombia. 3 days ago, on Tuesday, July 26, the Constitutional Court of Colombia ruled that same-sex couples must have the same right to legal recognition as opposite-sex couples. And it gave the Congress of Colombia 2 years to provide for this through legislation. The court said, and I quote, "If by the 20th of July 2013, Congress has not acted, gay couples can go to a notary and, with the same solemnity of a heterosexual marriage, enter a union similar to one between a heterosexual couple. The name of the institution, be it civil marriage or otherwise, will be up to the Congress." End quote. So a very exciting development there from Colombia. What will happen now? Will they get full marriage like Argentina? Or will they get civil unions like Uruguay? Well, who knows? But whatever happens, we'll certainly be following this story here on Reality Check. And just to give a bit of context, Colombia already recognizes same-sex couples living together as de facto relationships or common law marriages, which gives them all the same rights as opposite sex couples living in the same situation. This was decided by the Constitutional Court a couple of years ago in January 2009. So I guess what the court has just mandated now is that same-sex couples should also be able to go to the registry office and have a ceremony and get a marriage certificate or something similar. So great news from Colombia. And isn't it interesting how Latin America is surging ahead in leaps and bounds these days when it comes to LGBT rights? On almost every show of Reality Check now, we have some breaking news story of some major development coming out of Latin America. So we certainly live in exciting times. Okay, let's head north now from Colombia to the United States, where on Sunday, July 24th, same-sex marriage came into effect in the state of New York. And 659 couples got married just on that day. Actually, breaking the state's record for the number of marriages in one day. And many of those couples actually got married on the stroke of midnight as the law entered into force. They couldn't wait another second. So best wishes to all our listeners in New York State, especially if you've got married in these last few days, or if you're planning a wedding soon. Or even if you just attended a wedding at this historic moment. Many happy returns from Reality Check. And let's stay in the United States for another major news story, and that is the continuing saga of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the policy that bars same-sex attracted people from serving in the US Armed Forces. Now, in our last episode of Reality Check, recorded on July the 9th, Don't Ask, Don't Tell had just been struck down by the federal court and looked like it was gone forever. Well, guess what, dear listener? It's back again. Yes, back from the dead once again. But this time, it won't be around for much longer, because we now know the exact date on which Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to end forever. September the 20th, 2011. Okay, so let me just fill you in on what's happened over these last 3 weeks. First, as we reported on our last show, on July the 6th, a federal appeals court in San Francisco reinstated an injunction that had been issued last year prohibiting the Department of Defense from enforcing or complying with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So, for a period of a few days, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was dead. And the military actually began receiving applications from openly lesbian, gay, and bisexual people to join up or, in many cases, to re-enlist. However, the government appealed that court decision, claiming that it didn't want to short-circuit the repeal process set up by the Congress. And on Friday, July 15th, the Federal Appeals Court effectively said to the government, okay, fine, have it your way, we'll let you go through this repeal process that you've set up. And so the court once again revived Don't Ask, Don't Tell. However, the court imposed one major condition on the Defense Department. It said, okay, you don't have to recruit same-sex attracted people just yet, but at the same time, you cannot investigate, penalize, or discharge anyone who is openly lesbian, gay, or bisexual. So we're now in a situation where we have a kind of half-baked Don't Ask, Don't Tell in force at the moment. Or as legendary gay journalist Rex Wachner described it, what we have now is not Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but rather can't join, can't get kicked out. But anyway, whatever you want to call the policy, it won't be around for much longer because last Friday, July 22nd, Barack Obama announced that he, along with the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had certified in writing that the military is now ready for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that marks the beginning of the mandatory 60-day waiting period, meaning that finally, on September 20th, Don't Ask, Don't Tell will at long last be swept into the dustbin of history, never to return. And also, just as an aside, it's interesting to note that at the San Diego LGBT Pride March on Saturday, July 16th, about 300 active duty troops marched in the parade. This is the first time ever that serving troops have marched in a pride parade in the US in an organized and visible way. So once again, dear listener, we are witnessing history in the making. And now, just to update you on our other breaking news story from the last episode of Reality Check, and that is the situation of same-sex marriage in Brazil. The day we recorded our last episode, two same-sex civil unions had been converted into civil marriages. One was in São Paulo State and one in Brasília. Well, as we record today's episode, those two marriages are still legally valid, and two more have taken place. On Thursday, July the 7th, two women in São Paulo City converted their civil union into a civil marriage, and then on Saturday, July 16th, two women in Santa Catarina did the same thing, meaning that a total of four same-sex couples are now legally married in Brazil. What's going to happen from here? Will people just be able to keep converting their civil unions into marriages, or will these all be appealed in the courts? Well, I don't know, but don't worry, dear listener, we are certainly going to keep following this story here on Reality Check. Now, finally, for our last news story of the last 3 weeks, I just want to take note of the great news from Geneva, because last Monday, July 25th, ILGA, that is the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, was granted consultative status at the United Nations. This basically means that as an NGO recognized by the UN, it has a lot better access to the workings of the UN. It can attend meetings, lobby diplomats, organize events, submit reports, make oral submissions, and basically make its presence felt within the UN system. Interestingly, ILGA was the first international LGBT organization to get UN consultative status back in 1993. But it was taken away the following year after a campaign by the religious right. Finally, after 17 years of fighting to get it back again, they've finally done it. So, a well-deserved victory for ILGA. The vote in the UN Economic and Social Council was 29 in favour, 14 against, and 5 abstentions. And I'm sure it will come as no surprise to learn that the countries in favour were largely from Europe and the Americas, plus Australia, I'm pleased to report. And those voting against were from Africa and the Middle East, plus Russia. No surprise there. And interestingly, the Asian countries were pretty much split, some voting for and some voting against. And happily, India voted in favour, so hopefully a sign of good things to come there from that giant of a country. Now, that's about all the important LGBT news for the last few weeks, but let's take a few moments now to look at some of the other LGBT news items that we missed out on during Reality Check's 8-month hiatus from October 2010 until July 2011. So we had a look at some of the biggest news items in our last episode, but I want to cover briefly a couple more things that have been going on, specifically in Malawi and Cameroon. So let's start by having a look at what's been happening these past few months in Malawi. Now, listeners will probably remember the long, drawn-out case of the arrest and trial for homosexuality of Tiwonge Chimbalanga and Stephen Mongeza that went from December 2009 to May 2010. Both men were finally pardoned after much international uproar and a visit to Malawi by the UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon. Well, dear listener, you might have thought, after so much international criticism, that the authorities in Malawi might have begun to think about altering their penal code when it came to the criminalization of homosexuality. Well, it seems they did in fact do that, but not in the way you may have hoped for. Because it seems they sat down and they thought to themselves, you know, it's really unfair that two men should be sent to jail for loving each other. So, to make things fair, let's make the law apply equally to two women as well as men. Yes, dear listener, I'm not joking. Instead of decriminalizing homosexuality, in line with the slow and steady trend throughout the world, in December last year, the Malawian Parliament amended its penal code to apply criminal sanctions against women who engage in same-sex relations. So they're now criminalized the same as men. Well, that's fairness for you, I suppose. So, an incredibly frustrating situation there in Malawi. And I have a feeling that, given the strength of Christianity in Malawi, and in fact of Christianity and Islam in all of Africa, it's going to be a long, long time before attitudes to homosexuality change in Malawi and throughout Africa, unfortunately. And staying in Africa, let's go to another depressing story, this time from Cameroon. In March this year, in Yaoundé, the capital of Cameroon, a man called Jean-Claude Roger Mbede arranged to meet a friend of his by text message. When he got there, though, the friend was in the company of the police, who arrested Jean-Claude and tried him for the crime of homosexuality. In April, he was convicted of that quote-unquote crime and sentenced to 3 years in prison. He's now serving out his sentence in the brutal Kondengwe Central Prison in Yaoundé. Yes, dear listener, you heard correctly. 3 years in an horrific Cameroonian prison for nothing more than feeling same-sex attraction. Words cannot describe how outrageous this is. Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and other human rights groups have been campaigning on this case, but Jean-Claude remains in prison to this day. If we hear any news on this story, we'll certainly be letting you know here on Reality Check. Okay, that's all the LGBT news for today. Let's take a quick break now, and when we come back, we'll have a look at my psychic predictions for 2010 and see how I went. And I'm also going to make a few more for the next year and a half or so. So don't go away. Much more Reality Check coming up here on Joy 94.9.
More diversity over the weekends than any other radio station. Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Katie Lang, and you're listening to Australia's first and only lesbian and gay radio station, Joy 94.9.
We now move into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And today we're going to continue what we did on our last show, and that is looking back over our predictions for 2010 to see which ones came true and which ones didn't. Now, last time we had a look at the predictions made by two of the world's greatest psychics, Sylvia Brown and Nikki, Psychic to the Stars. But today, what I want to do is have a look at my own predictions for 2010 and see how well I went. And also, regardless of how well I go, I want to make another round of fresh predictions for the coming year. Or, well, let's say year and a half or so. Now, but just quickly before we do that, I'd just like to make an interesting observation about something that's happened since our last episode of Reality Check, which was about 3 weeks ago. because in preparation for that episode, I had a look at the websites of a lot of the world's most famous psychics. So I saw all their current predictions and warnings of things that were likely to take place in the near future. And, well, you would think, wouldn't you, that given that it was just days away, at least one of those psychics might have predicted that on Friday, July 22nd, an horrific incident of mass slaughter was about to take place in and around Oslo. Given that it was going to be the deadliest mass shooting by a single gunman in the history of the world, you would have thought that it might have popped up on their radar. Oh, well, even if they couldn't foresee the exact details, you might have thought at least some warning about danger in Oslo or threats in Norway or something, some flashing warning message in all caps at the top of the web page alerting the world of the impending calamity. But no. Of all the websites I visited, none of them seemed to be aware of the impending disaster in Norway. Not one. Does make you wonder, doesn't it? Or, well, maybe I just don't really understand how this whole psychic prediction racket really works. But then again, I did go pretty well in my own psychic predictions for last year, so let's move on to that issue now. An objective and completely unbiased analysis of my psychic predictions for 2010. So, back in our first show for 2010, I made a number of psychic predictions for the coming year. So how did I go? Did I get a lot of hits, or was it all misses? Well, I guess it depends on how you define hit and miss. If you define those terms using the definitions favored by Sylvia, Nikki, and all the other professional psychics, well, I went incredibly well. So let's have a look. First of all, because it's an obsession we have here on Reality Check, I made a prediction about what would be the next countries and the next US states to get same-sex marriage. I predicted that Washington, D.C., Mexico City, and Portugal would be the next jurisdictions to get same-sex marriage. And guess what, dear listener? They were. Wow, finally the proof I've been looking for that I really am psychic. Well, except that to make those predictions, I used the Sylvia Brown method of quote-unquote psychic prediction. Yes, I read the newspapers and saw what was already about to happen and what was pretty much inevitable. And in the first week of January 2010, it was clear that same-sex marriage in those three places was by then almost inevitable. Still, if Sylvia can claim hits by doing that, well, so can I. But then I extended my powers a bit further and I went out on a bit more of a limb and predicted the next countries to get same-sex marriage after Portugal. And in January 2010, I predicted that they would be Slovenia, Denmark, and Iceland. And guess what, dear listener? I was right. As it turned out, the next country to get same-sex marriage after Portugal was indeed Iceland. So a massive hit there for Reality Check. And as for Slovenia and Denmark, well, I mean, I was right with them too. Okay, I know that some pedants out there will point out that Slovenia and Denmark don't actually technically have same-sex marriage yet, but, I mean, here at Reality Check, we don't like to get too pedantic. Because, I mean, let's look at what did happen in those countries last year. I mean, look at Slovenia. In March last year, the lower house of the Slovenian parliament approved a same-sex marriage bill on its first reading. So, I mean, I think that's a clear hit there for reality check. I mean, the fact that after that first reading, the bill's progress stalled, and then, well, in January this year, the government announced it was changing the bill, abandoning full marriage and instead strengthening the already existing registered partnership system. Well, I mean, that's a minor detail. So, I mean, I think that Slovenia is a clear hit there for reality check. And as for Denmark, well, I think we can claim another hit there because in 2010, the parliament debated a same-sex marriage bill proposed by the opposition parties. So, a parliamentary debate? Come on, I think that's good enough for another amazing hit by reality check. I mean, the fact that in the end, the bill was voted down by the governing coalition, well, I mean, that's by the by, really. So, 3 out of 3 for reality check so far. Wow, we are doing so well at this. Okay, but what about my predictions for the next US state to get marriage equality? Well, dear listener, last year in January, I predicted they would be Maryland, Hawaii, and New Mexico. And once again, 3 out of 3. I mean, I am just on fire with this prediction thing. Okay, once again, I know the pedants out there will be pointing out that, well, after Washington, D.C. in March 2010, no U.S. state or territory got marriage equality until New York just last month. But again, why focus on these trivial technicalities? Because let's look at what did happen in those 3 states that I predicted. I mean, look at Maryland. First of all, in February 2010, the state attorney general issued an opinion which meant that Maryland began recognizing same-sex marriages performed in other jurisdictions. So, I think that's a hit, clearly. And then, in February this year, the state senate passed a bill to introduce same-sex marriage in Maryland. Yes, dear listener, you heard right. The state senate approved a marriage equality bill. So that is clearly a hit. Okay, so the bill didn't get through the lower house, so it never actually became law. And, well, it was 2011, but those are such minor details. So definitely a hit there with Maryland. Now, what about Hawaii? Well, listeners with good memories will remember that in April last year, the Hawaii legislature passed a civil unions bill, but it was vetoed by Republican Governor Linda Lingle a few months later in July. Well, dear listener, Ms. Lingle left office in December last year, and in February this year, the legislature again passed a civil unions bill, and this time it was signed into law by the new Democratic governor, Neil Abercrombie. So I think that means that I can count Hawaii as a hit too. Wow, I'm going so well at this. Okay, I know that technically what they got was civil unions, not marriage. And okay, it happened in 2011, not 2010, but I mean, these are such minor details. And certainly they in no way cast doubt on my incredible psychic powers. So hits there with both Maryland and Hawaii. But what about New Mexico? Well, actually, not that much has happened in New Mexico, although in January this year, the state attorney general said in a non-binding opinion that, quote, valid same-sex marriages in other states would likely be valid in New Mexico, end quote. In other words, given that same-sex marriage is not prohibited in the state, he predicted that a New Mexico court would probably recognize same-sex marriages performed in other jurisdictions. So I don't know about you, dear listener, but frankly, that's good enough for me. So another clear hit there. And a hat trick for Reality Check in predicting the next US states to achieve marriage equality. 3 out of 3, my psychic powers are just astounding. Now, some non-believers out there may allege that, well, when I make my predictions of which jurisdictions are going to be the next dominoes to fall in the same-sex marriage game, I'm not actually using my psychic powers. I'm just doing a little bit of analysis. Find out about the social and political situation in the region, what party is in power, how strong is the LGBT movement, all that kind of stuff. In other words, these kinds of predictions, and the kind that Sylvia Brown largely does, are merely educated guesses. Now, such an allegation is, of course, completely untrue. I rely entirely on my spirit guides when I make my astoundingly accurate predictions. And to prove that, let's have a look at the predictions I made last year for much more random events, things that can't really be determined through analysis. My celebrity death predictions. Now, for these, I relied purely on my innate psychic intuition. So let's have a listen to what I predicted back on January the 5th, 2010. This is what the spirits are telling me. John Howard, Tony Blair, and George W. Bush will all die in freak accidents during 2010. It's hard to believe, I know, but hey, you can't argue with the spirits. John Howard will be going for a walk beside the water at Sydney Harbour and will be struck by lightning. Tony Blair will be on a visit to Israel and will take a misstep and will fall off a cliff to his death. And George W. Bush will be jogging on his ranch in Texas and will be attacked by killer bees. He'll spend 3 days in a coma hanging on to life by a thread before finally succumbing to the poison of the deadly stings. So there you go, dear listener. Once again, a perfect hat trick. 3 out of 3. My predictions all came true. Just amazing, isn't it? What's that you say? Oh, John Howard, George W. Bush, and Tony Blair didn't actually die in 2010? That's true. I mean, they didn't actually die, you know, in the medical sense, in the sense that their hearts stopped beating and their brains were deprived of oxygen and all that. Although I think they were all accused of being brain dead at some point in 2010. I mean, but again, I mean, why get bogged down in these technical details? I mean, because those three men all did one thing in 2010, which means that their lives are pretty much over. So they are, for all intents and purposes, dead. You see, dear listener, believe it or not, in 2010, George W. Bush, Tony Blair, and John Howard all published their memoirs. Bush's was called Decision Points. Blair's was called A Journey, and John Howard's was entitled Lazarus Rising. So, I mean, it's pretty clear. The fact that they're all publishing their autobiographies means that their lives are now basically over. And if your life is over, you are logically dead. So, 3 perfect hits there for my celebrity death predictions for 2010. And, well, by the way, frankly, I think really I should get extra points because apparently John Howard's autobiography at 711 pages actually itself caused many deaths. of all those who died while trying to get through it. So let's just recap here and see how I went overall for my psychic predictions for 2010. Well, I managed to correctly predict 3 countries, 3 states, and 3 celebrity deaths. That's 9 out of 9, 100%. My psychic powers are absolutely on fire. If Randy doesn't give me his $1 million prize, there is something seriously wrong. Well, at least that's how I would judge my psychic powers if I were a professional psychic, like Sylvia or Nikki or one of the thousands of others. But of course, this is a skeptical show, so let's try to be a bit more rigorous and scientific in our analysis. So, out of my 3 celebrity death predictions, well, none of them actually technically died. And out of Slovenia, Denmark, Iceland, Maryland, Hawaii, and New Mexico, only one of those places got same-sex marriage in 2010, and that was Iceland. So that's a total score of 1 out of 9, or roughly 11%. So that's not bad, really, for a first go. And, well, of course, this is where Reality Check differs from the professional psychics when going back over past predictions. It's really a question of rigor, of having some kind of clear and specific criteria by which to judge your prediction. Setting up those criteria beforehand and then sticking to them when you look back in hindsight. And of course, not being flexible and reinterpreting your predictions when looking back over them. Of course, that's why psychics avoid making clear and precise predictions. They're much harder to mold to what actually happened. The smart psychics always make their predictions as vague and imprecise as possible to give themselves a lot of wiggle room to be able to later claim a hit. And of course, they always couch their predictions in terms of this might happen or this is a possibility, so that when it doesn't happen, they'll say, well, it was just a small possibility anyway. And if it does happen, they'll say, see, I knew that was going to happen. I said so before the event. What an incredible psychic I am. So, dear listener, we've seen how Reality Check fared in its predictions for 2010. What about 2011? Or, well, now that we're in July already, let's just round it off to an even whole number and say, what about the remainder of 2011 and the whole of 2012? What will happen between now and December the 31st, 2012? If I make predictions for this period, it also gives me 18 months instead of 12 months, so more chance of my predictions coming true. Okay. Let's see. So once again, I'm going to predict which places will be the next to get same-sex marriage. And of course, I can't resist the temptation to make some celebrity death predictions. So, starting first with the same-sex marriage predictions. Well, in terms of the next countries that are going to get it, I'm going to include Uruguay. After all, it was the first Latin American country to introduce civil unions, and their giant neighbor Argentina got marriage equality last year, and a marriage equality bill was introduced into the parliament in April this year. So I predict that by the end of 2012, that bill will have passed, and same-sex couples will be able to marry in Uruguay. Now, apart from Uruguay, well, I've got to include Denmark again, I think. It was the first country in the world to introduce civil unions back in 1989. Or, well, registered partnerships, as they call them there. I mean, it's a progressive Nordic country, pretty much surrounded by countries that already have same-sex marriage. Sweden, Norway, Iceland, and the Netherlands and Belgium close by. It's having elections later this year, and it looks like the Conservative government that's been in power for 10 years now will probably be kicked out, and Denmark will get a left-leaning government and possibly its first female prime minister. So that's all looking hopeful for a same-sex marriage bill sometime in 2012. Not that I'm doing analysis here, dear listener. This is just what the spirit guides are telling me. Now, finally, for my third country to get marriage equality, I'm going to say, well, it could be Finland. I mean, after Iceland and Denmark, it can't be that far behind. But no, I'm going to say, naively optimistic as I am, Australia. Yes, dear listener, don't fall off your seat, but I'm going to predict that the Labour Party adopts an official policy platform in favour of same-sex marriage at its national conference in December this year. And then it will introduce a bill to the Parliament, it will get support from enough independents to get through the House of Reps, the bill will fly through the Senate with the Greens holding the balance of power, and we'll see the first same-sex weddings taking place here by the end of 2012. Now, I told you I was naive and optimistic, but I'm including Australia along with Uruguay and Denmark as my predictions for the next three countries to get same-sex marriage. Now, what about the next three states of the US to get it? Let me just consult my spirit guides here for a moment. Well, they could get it back again in California, depending on how the Proposition 8 case goes. They could get it in Washington State, but that's probably a bit further down the pipeline. So I'm going to say Rhode Island, Maine, and Maryland. Yes, dear listener, I'm putting Maryland in my list again this time, because they came so close earlier this year. And the governor himself has just announced he'll sponsor a marriage equality bill for next year. So it can't be too long before they finally succeed. And as for Rhode Island, well, it has to be there. I mean, any reasonable person would have to include it as one of the next states to get same-sex marriage. I mean, let's have a look. It's in New England. It's surrounded by five other states that already have same-sex marriage. It's got the second highest level of support for marriage equality in the US, with 60% of the population in favor, second only to Massachusetts. It has no constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, unlike many other states. It has a new independent governor who publicly supports same-sex marriage, who took over the post in January from his nasty homophobic predecessor. Its state legislature is controlled by the Democrats. It has the country's first openly gay House Speaker in its House of Reps. In November last year, it also elected an openly gay man as one of its two members in the US Federal House of Representatives. So, it would seem like a no-brainer that Rhode Island must get marriage equality soon. And yet, the House Speaker, the gay House Speaker, Gordon Fox, announced just in April that there was not enough support for same-sex marriage in the legislature, and so it would be better to go for civil unions. Which they did, and they got, just a few weeks ago, on July 1st. But I don't care what the House Speaker says, it's pretty obvious to me that Rhode Island must get marriage equality sometime soon. So I'm putting it on my list to get there by the end of 2012. And as for Maine, well, it's the only other state of New England, along with Rhode Island, that doesn't have marriage equality yet. But I reckon they'll get it very soon. Now, of course, Reality Check listeners who pay attention will recall that a same-sex marriage bill was passed by the Maine legislature and signed into law by the governor in 2009. But opponents managed to gather enough signatures to get the issue on a ballot in November that year, and the law was unfortunately overturned. However, it's now a year and a half later. The polling has changed, and LGBT activists in Maine now think they can win at the ballot box in November 2012. And that's what they're planning to do, and I think I agree with them. So that's why I'm putting Maine on my list of predictions for 2012. So, let's see. Uruguay, Denmark, Australia, Maryland, Rhode Island, and Maine. They are my six predictions for marriage equality over the next 18 months. Now, let me listen to my spirit guides just a little bit longer to make my final predictions for the day, my celebrity death predictions. And this time round, dear listener, I'm going to predict that... Now, let me see here. What are the spirits telling? I'm getting Kevin Rudd, Tom Cruise, and Oprah Winfrey will all die in terrible freak accidents before the year 2012 has come to an end. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry if I shock you, dear listener, but that's what I'm sensing. Now, Kevin Rudd is going to be walking beside a lagoon in far north Queensland when suddenly a giant saltwater crocodile leaps out of the murky water and drags him under to a terrible and violent death. Tom Cruise is going to be filming Mission Impossible 5 in the Bahamas when he falls out of a helicopter into the sea, 200 meters below, and the sea is infested with sharks. His body will never be found, leading to a lot of speculation and conspiracy theories. Then, just days later at his memorial service in the Chapel of the Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Los Angeles, Oprah Winfrey will be in attendance, when suddenly an earth tremor causes a lump of masonry to fall out of the ceiling and plummet straight down onto her head, crushing her into a pulp. Well, look, I'm sorry to be the bearer of such horrible news, dear listener, but, I mean, what can I tell you? It's what the spirits are telling me. And, I mean, you can't doubt the spirits, can you? All right, I think that wraps up our session of psychic predictions for today. We'll return to this topic in our first show of 2013 and see just how right or how wrong I turn out to be. All I have to do now is just sit back and cross my fingers. Let the spirit guides do their work. Or whatever they do. Actually, is that how it works? Anyway, meanwhile, if you'd like to send in a comment or question for an idea for a future topic on Reality Check, please send us an email. The address is realitychecktony, that's T-O-N-Y, @gmail.com. You can also visit our webpage for past episodes of Reality Check. That's at realitycheckonline.net. Okay, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie reviews.
All your favorite shows all weekend, only on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Lily Tomlin, and you are listening to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is broadcast overnight here on Joy and is also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. It's movie review time here on Reality Check, and the two movies up for review tonight both come from Europe. The Princess of Montpensier from France and Armadillo from Denmark. Let's start with The Princess of Montpensier, or La Princesse de Montpensier, to give it its original French title. This is a new film by veteran French director Bertrand Tavernier, and it tells the story of a young woman, Marie, forced into marriage with a young prince, while passionately in love with another man, the Duc de Guise. Now, I think the most interesting element in this film is not so much the story of the love triangle, although that is pretty interesting, but I think it's more the period setting and the attention to detail, both in the production design and in the social and cultural elements woven into the story. The story begins in 1567, during some of the bloodiest years of the French Wars of Religion, a vicious period of civil wars between the Catholics and the Huguenots, the French Protestants. And the movie culminates in what is perhaps the most infamous event of these conflicts, the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre in Paris in 1572. And these wars and the alliances being forged between the various noble French families form the fascinating backdrop to the story. And the way these elements are integrated is very intelligently done, I think. These events are not the focus of the film, but are all going on around the main characters as they try to navigate their lives through the violent times into which they were born. And in this way, the movie deals with big themes like religious intolerance, the horrors of war, and the role of women, but in a subtle, understated way. And I also liked the clever ways in which the scientific and medical beliefs of the time are interwoven into the story as well. For example, there's a scene in which the young prince's mother is ailing in her bed from some unknown malady, and she complains that she's so tired and she's already been bled 3 times that day. Her husband reassures her that she needs to continue with the bloodletting treatment because each time blood is taken from her body, it's removing the toxic substances that ail her. She agrees that, of course, that's true. Needless to say, she doesn't survive for much more of the movie. And it's these small but insightful little moments in the film like that that create such a rich and interesting backdrop to the main events of the narrative. Another thing I appreciated about The Princess of Montpensier is that it doesn't rely on Hollywood clichés of medieval Europe. Although I guess technically this film is set during the Renaissance, not the Middle Ages, but still, it doesn't go for that overused kind of dark, gothic look that Hollywood is so fond of. In fact, most of the scenes are set in the bright sunshine, so it has a refreshingly realistic look and feel about it. Having said that, though, I should point out that the film does have quite a clunky and old-fashioned feel to it as well. And some of the music choices are rather odd, and this may put a few people off. The director is now 70 years old, and he began making movies back in the 60s and 70s. And it seems his style hasn't changed much since then. For example, there's no CGI or special effects at all in this movie, so the battle scenes are all done the old-fashioned way, with actors pretending to hit each other and falling off their horses. In fact, after the first 15 minutes of the movie, it was so clunky I was almost ready to walk out. But then came the scene of the prince and princess on their wedding night, in a four-poster bed, with the curtains only partially drawn, and members of both families standing around beside the bed to confirm that the marriage was consummated and that Marie was still a virgin. This scene is understated and very well done, and from that point I have to admit I was hooked. And actually, the film became quite endearing from then on. Also, I have to say that the occasional clunkiness is overcome by amazing performances from all the lead actors. They're completely convincing in their roles, especially Raphael Personnaz as the Duc d'Anjou. He's quite captivating every time he's on the screen. A talent to watch, in my opinion. So overall, The Princess of Montpensier is an odd film, but it's intelligent and quite endearing. So I reckon a movie worth checking out if you get the chance. Right, our second movie up for review today is the Danish documentary Armadillo. which is not a film about that gorgeous little armored mammal from the Americas, but is rather the name of a forward operating military base in Helmand Province, Afghanistan, manned by Danish and British soldiers. And I got to see a screening of Armadillo at the Melbourne International Film Festival, which is currently underway, running from 21st of July to the 7th of August, with plenty of interesting movies to check out. Armadillo follows a group of Danish soldiers on a six-month deployment at the Armadillo military base in Afghanistan. Apparently, the film is very similar in theme and style to the US documentary Restrepo that followed a group of US soldiers fighting the Taliban in the Karengal Valley in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, I can't compare the two movies because I haven't seen Restrepo, because it hasn't had a theatrical release in Australia. Yes, that's right, dear listener, Restrepo, one of the most highly acclaimed films of 2010, the winner of the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance, nominated for the 2011 Academy Award for Best Documentary, a film with a score of 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, a film about one of the most important issues of our time, never got a theatrical release in Australia. Which is odd because, well, you'd think it would be kind of relevant here considering that over 1,500 Australian soldiers are currently fighting in Afghanistan and many of them dying over there. But I guess Australian cinemas and distributors prefer to fill our screens with movies about superheroes and vampires and aliens and other very relevant and pressing issues. But I'm going to control my feelings about these matters for a moment and instead focus on the task at hand. Armadillo, also a highly acclaimed documentary like Restrepo. And I've got to say, Armadillo is worthy of its acclaim. It's a very powerful and impressive film, and one that stays with you for quite a while. You get a really insightful view of a conflict that we hear a lot about, but, well, most people really don't understand very well. To follow this group of soldiers as they prepare to leave Denmark, as they arrive in Afghanistan, as they settle in at the base, and then go out into the countryside on patrols, and then as they come under attack from the Taliban, is completely engrossing. It's a first-hand experience of an actual, current, ongoing war. And the battle scenes are heart-pounding. I don't know how the cameraman managed to film them, but he's there with the soldiers as they're getting shot at by machine guns out in the middle of a field, as they're diving for cover and as they're shooting back. It's really gripping stuff. And I reckon that one of the greatest insights you get from Armadillo is that, well, many people think you can kind of just go into Afghanistan, fight and eliminate the Taliban, and then the country will be quote-unquote free and everything will be okay. But when you actually witness the experience of soldiers on the ground who are sent there to do that, you realize that, well, basically, it's impossible. I mean, in fact, you wonder what, if anything, they can possibly achieve. Because, of course, the Taliban don't form nice, ordered lines in uniform and go out onto the battlefield to fight the forces of the coalition. Taliban fighters don't wear uniforms, and they look just like everyone else. So when the Danish soldiers head out on patrols through the nearby villages and surrounding countryside, well, everyday life is going on as normal. So the Danish soldiers are surrounded by men, women, and children going about their daily lives. How do they know who's the enemy? How do they know when they're going to be attacked? The scenes when they're out on patrol are extremely tense because you never know when an attack is coming or from whom. And you add to that the fact that most soldiers are in fact killed by IEDs, improvised explosive devices, that could be hidden anywhere, and, well, the tension becomes almost unbearable. For a soldier going out on patrol, every step could be his last, literally. So no wonder so many of them suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder later on. And what's it all for? What are they actually achieving? The Taliban are still there. The local villagers are angry with the soldiers for stomping through their fields on their endless patrols and killing their livestock during their fights with the Taliban. And for a desperately poor family, if their wheat field is trodden underfoot and their one milk-giving cow is killed, well, they literally won't have any food to eat. And of course, as in most wars, it seems that it is the long-suffering local civilians who are the ones getting killed more than either the Danish soldiers or the Taliban. The scenes in which some of these local villagers go into the military base to make various pleas to the Danish and British soldiers are some of the most moving. So overall, in my opinion, Armadillo is definitely a film worth checking out if you get the chance. It will change the way you think about the war in Afghanistan and give you a much better understanding about what's really going on in that horrible, drawn-out conflict. And that brings us to the end of the 55th episode of Reality Check. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com. And visit our website to subscribe to the podcast. That's at realitycheckonline.net. Okay, have a great week, everyone, and I'll be back with the next episode sometime in the coming weeks.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.